From WIPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. It's estimated that more than 50 million voice-assisted devices, like smartphones and smart speakers, are currently in use in the U.S. Voice-assisted technology, or conversational artificial intelligence, has made it easier for millions of people to perform daily activities and access information. But are there dangers in that scenario? We ask Amy Webb, founder of the Future Today Institute. She has her finger on the pulse of emerging technologies.
One of the concerns that we all should have going forward is, are our wants and needs and values reflected in those teams of people who are creating these systems, which are making decisions on our behalf?
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. It's estimated that more than 50 million voice-assisted devices like an iPhone, Amazon's smart speaker Alexa, or Google's Assistant are currently in use in the U.S. From a usability perspective, voice-assisted technology or artificial intelligence has made it easier for millions of people to perform daily activities and access information. But are there dangers that lie in that scenario? What happens if someone else could talk to your device, giving it commands that you can't hear? The New York Times recently reported that researchers had succeeded in doing just that. Joining us to talk about that reality and also the pros and cons of using voice-assisted devices is Amy Webb. She's founder of the Future Today Institute, which researches emerging technologies as they move from the fringe to the mainstream. She's also professor of strategic foresight at New York University Stern School of Business. She splits her time between New York and Baltimore, and we caught her while she was in town. Welcome to On the Record, Amy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Many people envision some sort of full-sized robotic figure when they hear artificial intelligence or AI. Break down that term for us. What does it mean for the average technology user?
We think of AI sort of always in hyper-modernistic terms because, you know, we've sort of seen a lot of indelible images and you know, watched some really compelling stories that have come through on pop culture. So Skynet, you know, for people who saw
Terminator.
Right, and it depends on the era that you know, and how old you are. So some people will remember the Jetsons and
Rosie. I do remember the Jetsons, but I had forgotten the maid.
Right, Rosie the Robot. Well, now here's something really interesting about the Jetsons, but it also sort of illustrates the perplexing situation that we're now in. The Jetsons were only on for a very, very short period of time. It was an animated sitcom intended for adults, not kids. What's so fascinating to me is that the Jetsons really set everybody's expectations for what our future should look like, which include things like flying cars and artificially intelligent robots. And so the challenge is that we have had a much longer time thinking about anthropomorphized AI and machines than we have actually living with the realities of AI. And as a result of that, you know, most people now have tremendous amount of misplaced optimism and fear when it comes to AI, but there's also sort of a fundamental misunderstanding of what artificial intelligence actually is and really does.
How should we?
Right.
What should we expect from it?
The thing that the average person needs to know is that AI systems harness data. They use algorithms written by people and increasingly by machines without humans in the loop. And the goal is to optimize and, using various mathematical processes, figure out what the best possible outcome is for every single decision point. You know, throughout our day, we're already interacting with AI. If you use Gmail, for example, you'll notice on your phone that when you hit reply to a Gmail message, it populates the bottom with some potential answers. so that you don't have to type. So that's AI. The anti-lock brake systems in your car that you desperately need in the city of Baltimore in the winter when there's snow and ice on the ground, that's AI. You know,
So AI does not necessarily have a direct connection to voice activation.
Well, so that's one modality. Before we get to that, the thing for everybody to sort of understand is that what we're talking about here is the third era of computing. And the first era was tabulation. The second era was programmable systems. So that's your laptop and like Word documents. This new era of computing is all about autonomous decision making, and that is AI. Now, from that sort of wheel, there are many, many spokes. And one way to interact with autonomous decision-making systems is by using your voice. So there are lots of different systems now with conversational interfaces that allow you to have a conversation. What you got to keep in mind, though, is the thing that you're talking to, like the Amazon Alexa or the Google Home, that's just a container. That's a container for the AI that you are having a conversation with. And for the moment, a lot of that is happening in the cloud. So you're having a conversation with your Alexa sitting in your kitchen, but Alexa is actually pinging back and forth different networks somewhere else to help answer and access those questions. The next thing that's coming in pretty short order is kind of fascinating, but also really, in a sense, terrifying, I think.
Which is?
Well, currently, we have entrusted the companies that build these systems and frameworks with our data. From my vantage point, there are 9 companies, which I call the Big 9, that are creating the future of AI. The Chinese companies are known as BAT, Baidu, Alibaba, and Tencent. And in the United States, the 6 companies are Amazon, Google, Apple, Microsoft, IBM, and Facebook. And at the moment, all of that work is sort of being done remotely in data centers and in networks that are not near you. And we've given a tremendous amount of data, of our personal data, to these companies. And, you know, as a result of that, we get to use their services. We don't even notice that we're doing it. The challenge, though, is that in more advanced AI requires different types of computer architecture. You don't want to have any lag. So if you're driving a car, for example, that has self-driving features, you don't want your car having to ping a cloud somewhere else, you know, ping some service really far away, because a few milliseconds of lag time could wind, you know, you up in an accident. So what's coming next is something called edge computing. And that is where the processing power and the data and everything else is sort of happening right very close to where that data is being generated. Which is to say, we're going to have to get really comfortable inviting Amazon and Google and Microsoft and IBM into the devices that we carry around with us in a much more profound way, where they have access to far more data and are able to understand and parse and see our behavior and everything else that we're doing.
This is On the Record on WIP. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with futurist Amy Webb, founder of the Future Today Institute, which researches and predicts technology trends. We're talking about artificial intelligence and voice-assisted technology.
And I think you just used the word terrifying.
Here's why I think that that should cause some concern. The reason is because there are some fundamental questions about artificial intelligence that have yet to be asked and answered. If what we're talking about is machines making decisions, and they are making those decisions using qualitative and quantitative data, subjective, objective, right, kinds of decisions, and we already know that bias is baked in to a lot of these systems, right, then that should cause us to ask the question, what are the values of the companies? What are the values of the people who are building these things? Are our unique characteristics and our values, the things that we hold dear, is that all being reflected in any way in teams that are, quite frankly, you know, pretty homogenous? And the answer is no. So one of the concerns that we all should have going forward is, are our wants and needs and values reflected in those teams of people who are creating these systems, which are making decisions on our behalf?
This is not an easy order. I mean, most of us, if you sat us down and said, so tell me your values, we could spit out something, but most of us don't have a really
coherent description of our own values mm-hmm. to share on a moment's notice and to sort of say we need that kind of value statement and we need to see how it applies to what you're doing seems
totally. That's right.
Very
and
difficult.
That's right. And you could look around, you know, right now in America and see some of the social unrest and the challenges that we are facing because we don't coalesce around a singular set of shared values, right? And now here's why this is so complicated. Once we start speaking to machines, once we have systems predicated on the data that's being amassed with objectives to make optimized decisions for us, you know, if those values aren't clearly spelled out, and to be fair, we can't even agree on what those values should be, you know, we're going to start having some real problems once we assign a lot of this decision-making capabilities over to various systems that might spit out answers that are confusing to us or don't make sense. And one of the challenges is that by design, you can't observe the decisions as they're being made. What's going to wind up happening is we see additional bias baked in. We see we could very well see regulation that becomes very heavy-handed, that doesn't help anybody, that stifles innovation. When we face a situation where people are terrified about the future because of a technology that they've just now heard about, even though it's been in development for a really long time, they make bad decisions. We make bad decisions under duress, and that winds up hurting everybody.
You have put a whole lot on the table, Amy Webb. We need to take a quick break here. Amy Webb, the founder of the Future Today Institute, which analyzes and predicts technology trends, is staying with us. We're talking about artificial intelligence and voice-assisted technology, the pros, the cons. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Short break, and then we'll talk about ways to keep data and personal information safe across your technology devices. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about voice-assisted technology and artificial intelligence, the pros, the cons. Amy Webb, longtime predictor and strategist of technology trends and the founder of Future Today Institute, is our guest. Popular culture feeds us the idea that devices with artificial intelligence can eventually think like humans. Do you think that's the case?
That's a misnomer, and part of the real challenge that we find ourselves in is that, you know, AI is already here in many different forms. The form that we are most familiar with at the moment is a canister that you can sit on your table or the phone that you might have, which recognizes your voice and has some kind of a conversation with you. The challenge is that that interface and that interaction feels comfortable because it feels familiar, and it mistakenly gives us the idea that we are training machines to think just like we humans think. And in fact, what's currently being developed are what are called deep neural nets. So bear with me here. These are potentially hundreds of thousands of simulated neurons, which all connect to each other as information is processed in various different layers.
And that is not how human assessment works?
You know, we have brains and we have neurons and our neurons pass information between them. But, you know, we understand very little about how the human brain even works. And if, you know, if I were to ask you to explain to me a decision that you've made that may not have had a rational basis, you know, you may not be able to understand yourself and therefore can't explain to me why you chose to do something.
Sure. Yeah.
That's reflective of one of the places we find ourselves in right now, which is that it's not always entirely clear to us why these systems make some of the decisions and choices that they do. what happened with a couple weeks ago in that New York Times story, when the researchers discovered that it was possible to hide content in the audio output of an AI system that humans couldn't hear, but, you know, the system was still able to sort of produce. That was likely the result of a particular type of training where false information is intentionally introduced so that the researchers can understand better how the system is working. And that's necessary as we go forward. So if you think about how children learn, they learn through reinforcement learning. When they do something correct, you praise them. When they do something wrong, you scold them. And it's through that series of reinforcements that over time, you know, hopefully your children grow up to become lovely, wonderful adults. So that is how we are currently thinking about artificial intelligence. The idea is that the systems get built. They are modeled very much off of our own human biology. And, you know, through different types of reinforcement learning, these machines learn ultimately incorrect and correct. The challenge is that we are not teaching them right from wrong. And that could have a profound implication on our futures because at some point, just as we must release our children into the world to grow and learn on their own, you know, the same is true of these AI systems. At some point, in order for them to achieve the truly magnificent ideals that we have set out, like curing cancer or coming up with answers to questions that we've never been able to crack on our own, in order for these systems to do that, we have to release them and allow them to start thinking about information in ways that are very much not human. And the challenge is that, you know, as humans, when we create new technologies, we do so usually with benevolent goals in mind. The challenge is that it doesn't occur to us that that technology could be repurposed for a different reason or could on its own in some way achieve a benevolent end. That is a real problem going forward. And we've already seen evidence over and over again of AI systems behaving in ways that, you know, are a little wonky, that ought to give us pause about what that implies for our future.
That's Amy Webb, founder of the Future Today Institute here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about artificial intelligence. The devices we use have some security measures. In your view, how well do they work?
What I find so fascinating is that most Americans will safeguard their social security numbers, you know, and do everything they can to prevent anybody from seeing those numbers. And yet they willingly give over their fingerprint or their face to a technology company without any understanding or any transparency in the process that would help them understand what's being done with that data and that information. You know, that's the United States. Let me paint you a sort of story of what happens in China, which, again, has some of the best machine learning algorithms and some of the most advanced AI in the world right now. You know, everybody in China has to, and I used to live in China, everybody in China has to carry a national identity card. It's against the law if you do not have that document with you at all times. China has developed some incredibly powerful facial recognition programs. And through a series of government initiatives, which are intended to control the population to make sure that there is social harmony, the government's doing all kinds of really interesting things right now with AI. So, for example, if you pull your car over on the side of the road in certain provinces and you've been on the side of the road for more than 7 minutes, or if you're driving and in congested areas and you start honking your horn a lot, your face will be recognized because there are smart cameras all over the place. Your face is then recognized and then matched with your identity card number. And then you automatically get find. You automatically get a ticket sent to you, but there's more. China has instituted a social scoring system. So this is going to start sounding to some people like
Black Mirror.
This goes
on your permanent record.
But it's more than just a permanent record mark. If you have enough negative points scored against you for breaking certain laws,
social norms.
Right, then you lose the ability to fly. Your children lose the ability to get into certain schools. For all kinds of different things. And all of this is because of the devices that people use and the AI systems that are used to recognize them. So, you know, in the United States, obviously, we don't have anything like that. However, in the absence of regulation and clear directives, right now, it's a little bit of the wild, wild west. And it's not entirely clear what might happen in the near future. In the EU, something called the GDPR went into effect.
The European Union.
That's right.
The new data privacy.
Right. Law. And, you know, that is a very heavy-handed, incredibly restrictive set of regulations that were laudable in intent. The idea was to make sure that everyday people had that layer of transparency and do understand what's happening with their data. However, the result of that has been sort of an incompatibility with systems outside of EU countries. And even within different EU countries, the law is being applied locally and slightly differently. So the result of all of this over a period of time is that this sort of freewheeling World Wide Web that we all know, and the way, you know, and our assumption that everybody accesses information and the same way all over the world is actually not going to be the case much longer. And the internet doesn't function the way that it always did. It's more like a series it gets splintered. So it's a series of splinter nets rather than one big internet where all of the information is free, which causes all kinds of problems down the road. The reason that I'm talking about this is because when people don't plan ahead for the potential risks and opportunities, you wind up with cases like China, where people are constantly surveilled now, and AI is aiding and abetting in that process. Or you wind up in European Union countries, where last week, all of Tribune Company's content, among many other, you know, reputable news organizations, it was all blocked, all of it. You couldn't access it if you were anywhere within a GDPR-observing country. And here in the United States, you know, who knows what could happen? So we have fetishized AI. We are fascinated by the future. And we are, unfortunately, a nation of nowists. We are people who are in America who think very much about what's happening right now. And we give short shrift to our decisions in the present and how that could alter all of humanity, you know, years into the future. All of this, to me, points to a sad reality, and that is we are all collectively closing our eyes, allowing all of these decisions to be made for us. We are closing our eyes and drifting off just as the machines are starting to wake up.
What should we be doing? What's the most important steps we should be taking as this is developing?
The very first step to take is to start paying better attention. When we talk about AI, the conversation always devolves into killer robots, right? Or weaponized, you know, systems that are going to come and kill us all. Or the fact that AI is maybe going to take away all of our jobs. The real future is far more nuanced and complex, and you can't unplug from that conversation because it seems so polarized and like you've already heard it all. You know, the phone that I grew up with at home, I could unscrew the receiver, you know, and I could take the box apart and see how the thing worked. You can't do that with a lot of our devices today. You know, the trade-off for convenience and devices that simply work is that there's this gap, this chasm that's been created separating us from how the stuff that we use works. And it's caused us to put our blind faith and trust in the various organizations that are making these things. And so we feel absolved of having to think through what we're doing. So, you know, the other thing to do is to stop and think about your personal relationship with the technology in your life, how you're using it, what information it's is being gathered, how it's being gathered, and think through what the implications might be. If you're the kind of person who hasn't changed your password for the last 2 years, even though you know that you need to change your password often, you know, we are passing the threshold into a new era, and it is incumbent upon you to take responsibility, to view this as a moral imperative, and to investigate and understand how your information is being gathered, what is being done with it, and what all of this means for your future living with smart machines.
What a lot to think about. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Amy Webb, founder of the Future Today Institute, which analyzes technology trends. We've been talking about voice-assisted technology and artificial intelligence, the pros and the cons. We'll post some links at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Glad you've been listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.